Hey, welcome back to another Uncanny Mystic Mind. So for today, I'm going to put up a live that we did with Man of Medim and Joe the Mystical Rebel. I had tried to put my YouTube and I was trying to stream with the TikTok live and all that shit, but that shit was too much. Like, it was like echoing, like it was all bad. So I just ended up going live instead with them, and then I just kind of recorded it on the side. And so yeah, so I'll be sharing that with you guys. And yeah, it was cool, man. We talked about a bunch of like random shit. I was just asking a bunch of like random questions. Well, not random, but random questions in terms of like magic and like the occult and stuff like that, and related to that. And so yeah, it was cool. A lot of good information, and we're having fun at the same time. It was cool. I think it chops off about, honestly, around roughly 20 minutes into the thing. We kind of restart it, so it's going to be like an abrupt beginning, because we had like technical sound difficulties. Like, we had kind of noticed a little bit of that, and so we experimented, and so I had like pretty much restarted the recording because I had to shut everything off. So yeah, but it was, you know, it was only about 20 minutes. And so, and then honestly, it was just about it was more personable stuff than not. It was more related to like, just like what we had been doing, like just like in regular life. Like, I was talking about like my bender, in poker that I had, that last night. And, because I got home freaking super late, like I think at almost 3 a.m. or something like that. And then I ended up, you know, eating food and all that shit. So God knows what time I went to bed. And so when I did the recording with them in the morning, you know, I was on just a couple hours of sleep. And I had to take all my caffeine and my herbal medicine and all that. And so, yeah, but it was cool. And yeah, so hopefully you guys like it. Yeah, and I'll catch you guys soon. All right.
Then you want to move into spell casting and ritual work, and then evocation and spirit work. So those are the 5 steps that I suggest you take. Check out my video on it, where I go a bit deeper into it, and then my YouTube, where I go super deep into it. Quinn, I don't know if you have an alternative suggestion.
I usually tell people just to, like first of all, if they're like really new to it, I just tell them just to get whatever book, like look up the occult, look up, you know, magic, and like somewhere on Amazon, and just get a book and just read into it, whether it's new age or not. You know, it's just kind of just plants the seed. And the trick is to not take everything you read as law. You want to just take it in, and then like go ahead and, you know, let that snowball into, you know, more reading and more studying. And once you read enough into the occult and into magic and mysticism, that is really what starts to reconfigure your perception of the world. So then, because a lot of the times when people get started into it, their first thing is like, is this real? You know, and you have to kind of reconfigure how you see magic and how you see the world. So when you study a lot, when you read a lot into whether it be new age, mysticism, occult, whatever, that will help reconfigure your perception of the universe. And then once you have finally been able to accept that, like that magic is it's a particular mechanical thing of the cosmos, then you start going into your correspondences and start reading into the more fierce material. I always recommend the self-initiation into the Golden Dawn book, because it pretty much, from through the grades, it goes over, like the beginning will go over like, you know, your basic astrology, basic Hermetic Kabbalah, basic tarot, you know, all the very basic things, the planetary correspondences. And through each grade, these go more into like the angels and the angelic hierarchies, and spiritual hierarchies and so forth, according to like Hermetic Kabbalah, and goes more into the tarot and so forth. So it progresses. But that is a good book because it has everything in a curriculum form. So you are able to kind of take in little by little, and it's all in like, it's all a very comprehensible step-by-step guide on to how to learn all of these little, all of these techniques. You know, when it talks about astrology, it starts out small with talking about the zodiacal, you know, signs, and then the next grade is going to go deeper into how to, you know, cast charts and so forth. So that's really helpful for people trying to get started. But I would say, other than reconfiguring your perception of the universe and how you see magic, a big part is just learning your correspondences. Your correspondences are, those are, you know, fundamental, because you see Mars, you're going to think of war, you're going to think of activity, you're going to think of like passion to a certain extent. You're going to see red, you're going to think cinnamon, you're going to think ginger, you're going to all of these things that correspond with Mars. You know, you're going to see like Kamael, Samael, you're going to hear Elohim Gibor as the divine name. All of these correspondences that you learn are going to pop up when you see a particular planet, or when you see Saturn, you think of Earth, you think of restriction, all of these things. So that's why correspondences are so important. And then that makes it a lot easier to navigate through pretty much any magical book, because they're all going to share usually the same type of correspondences. If not, they will differ very. The differences will vary, but that for sure is a good stepping stone into learning how to work magic.
Yeah, very good. Very well said.
Awesome answer, man.
Yeah, I love that because, it's like getting in touch with like the different versions of like archetypes. And then because it's like, I guess like what I kind of think about is like meditation. And then the one thing that I like, the first main thing is like for that I think about is like kind of like clearing yourself, because a lot of times like we already have the stuff within us, and even if we know it too or not know it, but the stuff around us, like it could either be like a distraction or maybe some like drama or this and that. And then so sometimes chiseling the stuff outside of us will kind of help us kind of like with like clarity and like clearing, so we can be able to think like kind of like coherently to ourselves. Because a lot of times we could just be bombarded with distractions, right, of whatever sort. And then after that, it's like I think about like that'll help you with getting to know thyself. And then so with like getting to know yourself, you get to figure out the different parts and like the different pieces of you, you know. And then so like that's where like the archetypes and the correspondences like go with that. And like that's pretty dope, because then later on, say with like even like chakra work, you can use that to figure out the archetypes of that to help you with like if there's something going on in your life, like, oh, you can kind of start pinpointing it. Oh, maybe I need more fire. Or, maybe I need to be more in tune with my mind or my emotional side or my feminine side, whatever it is, right? And then so that's a good way, because it's like a subtle art, you know, like this stuff. And then so that's like what I'm realizing too lately. Like a theme of mine has been like cleaning more. Like, oh my God, like I have to get more organized and I have to clean more, because now I'm starting to see that like magic has like this very cleanliness thing to it, where almost like sparkly in a sense. Yes. And then so I'm realizing that to tap into these, like whether it's a mind frame, a mindset, and then that's how you can start to like kind of move into the energy of the stuff. Even the mindset needs the clearness, how we're talking about clarity, like meditation. So just how you're going to have clarity for your mind with meditation, you also want to have kind of clarity on your living room floor or your kitchen or your bedroom, wherever, or your altar space. And so like clean is also kind of like, that's been a theme that's been with me lately too, like just kind of organizing more. And then that way I know if I do more work, like in my practical, you know, in my practical world, in my house like that, it's going to end up transferring like onto when I start to do like more like mental stuff or energetic stuff. It's going to help me out and stuff. And it'll be quicker. Like my results will be quicker, I guess.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, so I got a question, like, in terms of in my personal life, it's been something that has been, it's been a little bit of a thing, in terms of like baneful acts, right? Baneful works of magic. Like, in terms of that, in regards to like cleansing and stuff like afterwards, like, what do you guys recommend besides like a bath? Is there anything like in terms of like for baneful work that you guys would like think is cool for like cleansing purposes, like when you're kind of, you know, done or towards the end of your thing, like the end of your work?
Yeah. If I don't plan on following it up with like more baneful workings, I'll cleanse right away. I generally cleanse and banish weekly. So whether or not I do a baneful magic, which I don't do often, I banish and cleanse weekly. But if I have to do baneful magic, unless I plan on following it up like right away or like in the next day or two with another baneful working, and so I would like to use that residual energy that's still hanging around, I would cleanse and banish right away. You don't want negative energy just hanging around. It could, you know, cause a lot of problems within your home or wherever you're, you know, doing the ritual. So I would cleanse right after the working, unless you are doing another working that's malefic in short order. Good to know.
So you do.
Yeah. That's a good point that he put out there, because someone asked me around the same, they're talking about cleansing. And I also said it depends on the nature of the work, because you don't always cleanse or banish after a work, depending on what you're doing. And like Joe said, if you plan on doing a follow-up, you're not going to banish that. So when I did my latest video on that ritual that I showed, it is malefic work, and it lasted for 8 days. And so I would always clean when I walked into the temple room, but I didn't, at the end, I wouldn't cleanse, and I wouldn't asperge, and I wouldn't suffumigate. I kind of let it sit there. But at the same time, you got to remember that not everyone works within the ceremonial or Solomonic structure. So yeah. a lot of the working that I am doing, there's a lot of, like the jar that I had, was surrounded by particular sigils and surrounded by particular god names and so forth. So there's a lot of types of constraints or leashes, I would see them as, within my workings, to kind of keep them, kind of keep the work constrained in a particular area until I send it out. And when I send it out, that's when I bury the jar, and I have a little thing for that. But then that's when I do the final, like when I close, I'll do the asperge and the suffumigate. It depends on the nature of the working. And just like Joe said, you know, sometimes those baneful workings can go, if you are really doing a real strong one, they could go for a few days. And reading into like your more popular conjure workbooks, it usually talks about doing certain, not even just baneful workings, but also, healing works and stuff like that. You're usually doing those for about a week. You know, 7 days is kind of like that sweet spot, because that's the whole week and the 7 days that it took to create the earth and so forth. So that's kind of like the sweet spot of doing a ritual for that long. They don't always have to be that long, but, you know, depending on how strong I want it to be, you know, I'll usually aim for a whole week.
Nice. So after the whole, after however many days, then that's when you typically will shut it down like that with the full cleansing thing. So it depends a little bit on like the actual version that you're doing. And then
it depends on the nature of the work.
And then you do like a regular one, how you're saying, Joe, like just in general, you do kind of like how like there's more of a maintenance, like kind of like in the theme of maintenance, right? Like a weekly maintenance version, yep. Right? Uh-huh. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Every week I banish and cleanse. I reinforce my shields and my wards. Yeah. I kind of call that spiritual maintenance. Yeah. Keeping my spiritual, faculties up to snuff and things like that. Definitely. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. That's definitely important. That's definitely important too. Yeah. Like, a little bit earlier, they were asking about like some tips or some, some like input on like for like beginning or like just getting started and stuff like that. And I remember before each one of us, all of us or you guys have talked about ancestors, like kind of like it's pretty good and pretty cool, especially like it's like a nice way to get you kind of like started with like these different types of like venerations and like connections and connecting and stuff like that. Like, and so like lately that's been like a theme throughout the weeks too, that I've been having, in terms of like the importance of this. And then, so, I don't know, Quinn, even you went the other week. I don't know. I saw, I don't know if it was a live maybe or a video, I forgot, but, you have two different sections in your room. You have like a section, right, for ancestors, and then a section that's like non-ancestor related, right?
Yeah, I ended up, since I'm in the, I was in the process of having, I ended up, integrating my ancestral altar with my altar for Hecate and also my spirit jar. And it really clicked. Sometimes when you do stuff like that, like, you'll get this like knot in your stomach, or you'll get this like feeling that like it's not working or doesn't mesh well. And that's pretty much a good sign from the spirits that like, yeah, don't do this. Go try a different way to, go about it. If it's nagging at you, then all right, then this is the way to go. Cause that is usually the common communication you'll get from the spirits that you're working with. It'll just be something that pesters you. Mm. But when I put my deific altar of Hecate, I put my ancestors in my spirit jar all on this table. It seemed like they all were pretty cool about it, especially Hecate being like, she who walks the grave. I have my ancestors, deceased Catholic spirit. And then I also have my spirit pot of a goetic spirit. It's all very Catholic and, on the more darker side. So it seemed to really resonate really well with each other. But as you were talking about, I used to keep them separate just because I wanted them to have their own thing. But after putting them all together, it actually worked out pretty well.
Nice. That's cool. That's interesting that you said that, like, you could feel like if it's contrary to that you could feel like pretty much damn near nagging at you. Like, that's pretty cool, man. Like, to like see that and to like know that's even a thing, that sometimes they can be particular, or it can be a particular situation. And then so they will let you know. Yeah. That's something that I've been, what was that?
Oh no, I disagree. It's a very subtle thing that you'll feel, but like it's just one of those things that you'll feel it in the pit of your stomach that like this isn't right, or something that it just feels off. So that's when that's really the spirits talk to you in a particular way that like that's just how the easiest way to communicate, through your emotions and through your psyche,
Right on. Yeah. Cause it's a trip how like they will let you know. And like, that's why lately I've been like, oh, the ancestors is like really truly a thing, because it's like, now I'm starting to pick up the subtle clues of like how they let you know. And like, even if you try to think you're going in a certain direction, sometimes you get, it's not like you get pulled the other way, but it's almost like, obstructions get put in there, and like they're letting you know, like, no, like this is like we're gonna keep putting like almost like obstructions in here because this is not where like the general like the general way you're supposed to be going. So it's like a trip how that works. I'm just getting hip to that, you know. Yeah, there's like some kind of connection in terms of like very earthly stuff that we have with our ancestors, which makes sense because we came from them, you know. So yeah, it's a trip, man. It's a trip. Yeah. Like that's more newer to me, but I'm seeing just how valuable it is. And so when I heard people talk about ancestors before, I was like, oh yeah, like that's cool. But now I'm like, I don't know. I just kind of see it like on a more, like a more deeper and valuable level now. I'm like, oh my God, like I take it more seriously now than I did before. Like definitely like way more serious.
Good, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah,
the closest spirits to it, so
yeah, that makes sense, right? Yeah, yeah, even how Quinn was saying too, like the emotions will let you know, and like you know, or like the pit of your stomach and this and that, like it reminds me, because that's why I was asking about the whole cleansing thing, because I remember some like a while back ago I was telling me and Joe were talking about I was doing this working and I had forgotten like a step, right? I had missed a step. And I had to like I freaking left work and I came back home to finish my step. Like I had to drive back home because I felt like not right. Like I was like, I feel like kind of fucked up. Yeah. And then when I did do that and I finished my steps, then after that, I felt better. I was like, oh my God, I'm like, okay, like I got it off me. You know what I mean? It's almost like I still didn't complete whatever I was doing. So I had the stuff on me and I was like, wait, I have to finish this. Like there was like a part that I had missed. And then so, like that stuff's a trip. Like you have like the protocols make a difference, you know, because yeah, especially with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Have you ever like you know how like when you're singing along with a song and then you get the words wrong and it just and you in the pit of your stomach you feel like, yeah, it just messed up the whole flow, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much like that. And then like you're like, oh, like how can I fix this? Like you just want to try to fix it, you know, or try to kind of track it back or like trace your steps or whatever like that. And so yeah, man. It's like work, you know, like, you know, it's like a type of work. So you gotta like freaking make sure you do the job right, you know. Like it's like some people like you like try cleaning up a house, right? Like imagine you're doing spring cleaning, right? And then so you gotta have a clothes in your closet and all these other miscellaneous things and so you have the intention of cleaning up your house and organizing and getting hella trash out, but what if like you end up making more of a mess because you just dumped hella shit out in your hallway and like you didn't really kind of finish the job, like you kind of put some shit away but you ended up just kind of just moving stuff around and it didn't really get like clean, like you just kind of like it's kind of like that. It's like I don't know, you got to kind of finish off the job, like really organizing and stuff like that. Cause yeah, especially cause with that, you're going to be feeling the garbage if that's what you had put out or whatever. Yeah. So, I guess I'm curious, like, in regards to like energy stuff, you know, cause, that's important too. And, like in regards to like shielding and like mirroring, like what are some like tips that like you guys got? Like, cause like for me, like I guess I do my versions of this, my interpretations of this, but it's like hard for me to explain. Like I don't know. Like I think it would be cool to have you guys give me your two cents on this because I know you guys could probably be a lot more articulate than me in regards to explaining that. What do you guys think about like how would you guys explain that to someone? Like tips and like beginning things for like shielding and like mirroring concepts for energy.
So I'm not sure what you mean by mirroring, but shielding, so protecting yourself and like, you know, your own shielding and warding and things like that. My first tip would probably be to do it as often as you can. When you are just beginning, I would probably do it every day. I've been doing it for 20 years and I do it once a week. So, when you're just beginning, I would probably do it every day to make sure that, you know, your protections are up to snuff. If you want, you can, you know, devise a talisman or an amulet or a phylactery that can be used for protection. Mojo hands and sachets, which are herbal bundles,
that you can carry around to boost that. Also, talking to your ancestors and other sort of guardian spirits or protective type spirits that you might have agreements and pacts with, you can ask them to provide protection. Some of them will actively protect, others will just, you know, add an extra like shield or a ward to you or your place of business or home or whatever. So yeah, those are some of the tips that I would probably tell someone who is a beginner. I would suggest getting books like Protection and Reversal Mat by Cindy Miller. So you can learn how to shield and ward and do other methods of protection. There's also, as laughable as she is in the general occult sense, Silver Ravenwolf does have an interesting book called Silver Spells for Protection, which some of those are pretty good and can be utilized to help, you know, shield and ward. Also, Maya Ohm has some interesting shielding techniques in her books on manipulating energy. So, yeah, that would be my suggestion for someone just starting out with, like, shielding and warding and stuff like that.
Nice. Hell yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, so I didn't know the... Yeah, go Quinn.
Go ahead. No, I was going to expound upon that because, like, there's like two big topics that you hear in Witch Talk. It's curses and hexes and protection. And the funny thing is that when I think of having to protect myself, it's never really about like other people. I'm not really worried about other people trying to curse me, and you know, good luck to them if they want to. the first and foremost practical sense of protection is to display yourself to the world in a you know, kind manner. You know, don't, you know, you, if you're not a dick, if you're not an asshole, then, you know, there's a good chance that no one's going to try and curse you unless they're just trying to experiment and see what they can do. But other than that, when I think of protection, it usually has to do with, because when we're doing spirit work, we're usually kind of opening the floodgates, per se. And sometimes, you know, you could, things will get attracted. You're like a light bulb to a moth, to moths, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And things will get attracted. And depending on how you work, those things can linger and they could attach themselves, or they could just like end up leaving, or not really being attracted to the area, depending on what you got going on. So, for instance, in the structure in which I work, it's a Solomonic structure, as we all know, and it's like 70%, 75% protection, and safety protocols. You got the circle, you got the divine names, you got the invocations of God and angelic names. There's so many layers of protection. You got the sword, you got the dagger, you got so all these things that, like, I really don't worry about negative things attaching itself to my home and then having like weird stuff happening, or, you know, people getting depressed, or I really don't worry about that because of all of the natural safety protocols that are already within the structure of Solomonic magic, you know? So that's not really something that I truly emphasize, because that's just kind of part of the system. Right. You know, you do have certain types of systems and traditions where you're not working with such safety protocols. So you do have people that will, you know, like you said, make little bundles of herbs and make wards and things like that. But those are kind of integral to the system that I work. So it's not something that I really, you know, think like, oh, I need to protect myself. No, it's already there. You know, everything is pretty much constrained. Everything I do is surrounded by divine names. And you know, there's always prayers and invocations going on in my rituals. So it's not really something that I worry about. But if you don't have all that, then you would have your cleansing baths. Then you would have your suffumigations in daily and so forth, and your banishing rituals and all that.
Nice. Oh man, I didn't know it was like such a huge percentage like that. You said like about 70% or something like that, you know. It's like with it, it's kind of like implemented in there already. Like, that's pretty cool, man. Like,
yeah, that was just a number. I just my point was that like there's a lot of safety protocols
right
within more magic, so it's not something that I really I trip about too much. Maybe I would emphasize it more if I was trying to evoke a more powerful goetic spirit or something like that, like a spirit that like that is known to be pretty volatile, then I would probably emphasize it a little bit more and be more careful. But other than that, I really don't, it's not something that I worry about.
Yeah. Well, anything more than like 50% is a lot, is like a huge, you know, chunk of it, you know, so that's dope. And then, yeah. So, and I can see that wouldn't be something that you're going to be tripping off of per se, because of kind of what you're already doing a lot of the time. Yeah. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
So I guess is marrying even a thing, or is that like a new age concept? Like I thought that my idea of it was like, it's like similar to shielding, but just like a little different, where like the difference is like with a shield, it's more like just blocking anything energetically in a sense, or like from penetrating, right? And then marrying would just be like a kind of like in the same vernacular idea or theme of like kind of like evil eye ish, you know, how like if someone's trying to give you like some evil eye, but it's just gonna get put back on them. I guess that was kind of like a way I thought about it, but I don't know.
That would just be reversal magic.
Okay.
Which is the title of the book that I was talking about earlier.
Okay.
Protection and Reversal Magic. Yeah. So I guess the term mirroring would be valid, but I feel like that would be more of a new age term.
Yeah, it must be a new agey term then. Yeah, it must be a new agey term. Yeah, I mean, like in a sense, like a mirror is kind of like a reversal, kind of like when you wear like a shirt that says Polo, in the mirror it's gonna say Olop or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
but okay, that's good to know. Okay, it's basically reversal. I wonder, I think I have that book. I wonder if I have it on I might have it on Kindle, I'm not sure. But yeah. That was Jason
it's
Miller.
Really good.
That was Jason Miller, right?
Yep.
Okay,
Jason
okay.
Miller.
Okay, cool.
The Sorcerer's Secrets fame. But speaking of authors, somebody in my chat is asking, why do I say Silver Ravenwolf is laughable? Because almost all of her books are written in a very childish way, a very childish tone. She wrote most of her books when she was raising younger witches. Now all her kids are adults. But she wrote those books because she was struggling raising younger witches, so she wanted to write books for younger witches. And so they're fine when you're 13 or 14 and you don't know anything. But the further you dive into the craft and into occultism, the more you'll see that there's a lot to build upon in her works. I mean, even some of her more lauded works like Solitary Witch and things like that, there's a lot to be desired when it comes to her works. So that's what I mean when I say she is laughable. I don't know anybody, like, I don't know anybody who, say, for example, me, a grown man, didn't know anything about magic and I wanted to know where to start. I don't know anybody that would recommend me to go read Silver Ravenwolf. If I was 13, they might tell me to go read Silver Ravenwolf, but you wouldn't tell an adult to go read Silver Ravenwolf as they're starting, or really any point to discuss magic. So
That's a fun fact that you said that I didn't know about that, that she was like basically catering to literally her younger people. Like, so she was literally like, it was a, like a literal thing. It wasn't just because that's like something that she liked to do. It was like more like out of a practical reason. I was thinking initially when you had brought that up, like why you said that, or like kind of what it alludes to is that like by and large, like when you first go into like the whatever bookstore, that main bookstore, like that Barnes and Noble or like the whatever your local Barnes and Noble is, that she like Silver Raven will be one of the main ones that you see. So it's kind of like more main, like mainstreamish. So that's kind of why I thought that it was like that you were kind of saying like that just because she's more mainstream as opposed to like you know, when you talk about these.
Nothing wrong with being mainstream. It's just it's super watered down. There's better authors out there to begin with.
Right on. Freaking what do you guys think about that the High Magic book by Damien Echols? Do you guys think that's interesting? Because one of my friends was asking me about it, you know, because I guess he's like kind of famous from the from all his stuff in the past, you know, with his story, you know, so he's kind of more on the famous side.
The West Memphis 3.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
I don't know about Quinn, but so I know who he is and I follow him on YouTube, but I don't really watch any of his content and I've not read any, I didn't even know he wrote a book, so I have no idea. I would not be able to comment on his book because I've not read it. Mm.
Yeah, I read his High Magic book. I remember. Oh man, I was on a long drive back to Denver from my in-laws, and it was like a 6-hour drive. And I had his book on Kindle, and I listened to it the whole way. And this was right before I started getting like really serious into like getting into practical magic. This was still in my like trying to, you know, just, you know, learn about it days. And it really pushed me to like be like, oh, okay, like let me, I think I want to do this. You know what I mean? Mm. I've been into the occult ever since like I was a little kid. I never did any practical work with it because, you know, you need a job, you need money, you need your own place to really go all out. And his book really pushed me to get practical with it. Now looking back at it, it's his own thing. Like for instance, the LBRP, instead of just having the angels at the quarters, he likes to put Sandalphon below him and Metatron above him. A lot of his stuff is like taking Golden Dawn techniques and kind of modifying them to fit his own little style. You know, so his approach is very new age-ish in a sense. There's a lot of visualization, a lot of meditation, a lot of mysticism in there, because he is kind of coming from that Golden Dawn and Crowley approach. So now I really don't, he's not really my style, but I can't take it away from him that his High Magic book did kind of get me started in thinking like, hey, you know, this is something that, you know, I am now going to practically apply myself to the occult rather than just read books. It's a good beginner book. It's a good beginner book.
Cool. Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know what to think. Cause like, there's a lot of like speculation and like a little bit of controversy in regards to him. I had, did I subscribe? I don't think I subscribed to him, but I had watched, I'm assuming this is like when he first started going on YouTube. I had caught like one or two of his videos. Like he was wearing like all black and he talks really calm. And like, it seems like he works with stuff, but like, I didn't know what to think. Like I just didn't know exactly. I just didn't have enough information like to be able to truly feel like feel something out. But I mean, he was interesting, you know, and I just didn't have enough information to really kind of call it out and stuff like that. But yeah, right on, Quinn. That's pretty cool. Pretty good, pretty good summary on that. Yeah.
Just really quick, let me
respond to K-Dog in my chat. They say I'm 36, but it's my first year in the craft. Thank you. So if it's your first year in the craft, yeah, I wouldn't go with Silver Ravenwolf. If you're interested in witchcraft over like ceremonial magic or something like that, I would go with maybe like Robin Artisan. Some of his books, go on Amazon and you can look them. There's The Witching Way. There's Letters from the Devil's Forest. There's the Elfthane Thread or something like that. There's a bunch of books by Robin Artisan. I would recommend books by Nicolaj Domatos Frisvold. I would recommend books by Andrew Chumbly if you want to get into the more esoteric side of witchcraft. There are other authors out there for witchcraft that I would recommend over Silver Ravenwolf that will give you the basics, but then also take you deep into it. So that's that would be my suggestion. And hey, Jen, what's going on? Welcome.
I also had a question. I don't know if they're still on here, Return of the Mac, but they were wondering, I hear about this a lot, Bill, if the doing the LBRP astrally or the mind's eye is as legitimate as doing it out loud. And someone had replied to them saying that the visualization is more important. I tend to differ on this, even though I know the visualization for sure is very important when it comes to the LBRP, but the intoning of the names and so forth, that the intoning actually has a lot to do with the metaphysics of the ritual. So even though you can do it astrally or, you know, visualize the LBRP, believe it or not, the intoning of the names and the vibrations had to do with like some certain like type of like resonance within your own astral body and your etheric body and your nervous system and the resonance into the astral realm itself. So intoning the words is actually a very important component. And people usually wonder this because they don't want to be intoning these loud divine names when they live in an apartment or something like that, you know, because they don't want to be seen as, you know, like they're devil worshiping next door or something like that. But yeah, the intoning is a very important component. So I just wanted to add that.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I remember we were even talking about that too. I remember because I was asking similar questions. Like I was like I was just wondering if you even could do that. But then like when you were explaining like the vibration part, and you even mentioned how like here in the front, like under the nose, is kind of like a sweet spot for like vibrations. And I was like, oh yeah, that's like so true, because a lot of great experiences that I've had have been with breath work and then with vibrations that I've had like in my throat and then here too. Cause like for me, like I noticed like it's like a weird tickly, like there's like a weird tickly-ish thing that happens too, that I noticed that can help kind of take you kind of like into like a kind of like a trancey state and stuff like that, or like a receptive state. Yeah. So yeah, there's something to do it. Like, you know, there's something to doing it like all the way, like all out. You know what I mean? Like some people like theatrics, you know, some people like the practicality, or, you know, like to be able to touch, like, you know, how different senses. And then, but for me, I just think it's just like everything, like piecing it all. Like, that's like what I'm seeing now is like, it's everything. Like, I'm like noticing, I'm like starting to kind of figure this out a little bit now, like the energy, like there's everything in the energy. So like it's nice to incorporate everything. So that's why it's cool when I see you guys like with your tools and stuff like that, and like even this implementing circles. Like I think all that stuff's like really dope. Like it's really cool. It really has a good, like there's like really a place for that for sure. Like I really dig that.
Yeah
for sure.
I've got a question in my chat. Draconia Italia, says, how do you know what path to walk? So many are misled. I'm limited in time due to my age. I want to make sure I utilize the time I have to learn the truth and not foo-foo. So the good news is that within the occult, I'm not speaking for the religions of the world, specifically within the occult, there is no right path or right way. The purpose of the occult and its various paths are to get you back to whatever you think or whatever that path that you've chosen says God is, or the gods or the universe or whatever they call it. And so there is no run. There is no one right way. There's multiple ways, and you're free to choose whichever path within the occult you would like to walk down. If you prefer, you know, walking the tree of light, you know, then you would go to Kabbalah, right? If you prefer something like the spheres, you would come to Hermeticism. If you prefer, you know, the ladder or something like that, you would go through the various shamanic, you know, practices, and so on and so forth. There's no right way. It's just whatever resonates with you and calls out to you. A lot of people like to be historically accurate and go with what their ancestors went with. So if you want to look into, you know, your ancestry and find out what sort of mystical or occult practices they may have done, you can do that. If you're Italian, which I'm judging off your name, I'm going to assume you are Italian, you may want to look into stregheria or strega, and maybe, you know, Italian shamanism, Italian witchcraft type of a thing. But yeah, that would be my take on it. I don't think that there is one right way within the occult. There's various ways back to God, but you're free to choose within the occult, you know, that path.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think reading a lot of different sources for sure will help you kind of, you know, siphon through, you know, some things. Like if you just stick to one author or one, you know, type of approach to spirituality, you're gonna kind of live in an echo chamber, you know. So it's best to kind of really just explore at the beginning, and then you're gonna find certain philosophies and theories that will resonate with you more. So you might read one book, like I was talking about Damien Eccles. I read High Magic. I liked it. But as I went deeper into my practice, it no longer really applies to my practice as much as it did when I very first started. So, you know, you just kind of go explore and, you know, go read as many resources as you could find. And something will just kind of call out to you, and you kind of, you know, you pull on that string and you follow the thread, and before you know it, you've found a path for yourself that really just sits well with you.
Hell yeah, dude. Because it's like good to like read different shit, because besides knowing what you like and what kind of like you resonate with, you'll also end up reading stuff. You're like, oh, this is not the way I want to go. And so that's also a good thing, you know? So you start to like kind of figure yourself out. And I'm curious, like, I don't know about the, Joe, when you explained the shaman version, you said like ladders. Cause I've heard, you know, I've heard of spears and like the tree, but, was it ladders that you said for shamanism?
Yeah, there are several shamanic groups that have a similar thing to, you know, the Tree of Life and walking the sephiras, or ascending through the spheres. But instead of, you know, the Tree of Life or the spheres, it's a ladder. So you climb, you know, the ladder spiritually, and each rung would represent a planet so the one that I practice, it starts from the bottom and works its way up. So it starts at the bottom, and you have to go through the realm of man first, and then you would go through the elemental realms, and then after those four, you'd go onto the seven planets, and then after that would be God. But as a hermeticist, I would say that there's more out there than just those 11. Yeah, so they look at the ladder just like, you know, I would call the spheres, or, you know, the Tree of Life and their separates. It's just another interpretation of getting back from here, the earthen sphere, back to God. Mm. So
cool. Like, what do you guys think about, like, there's a little bit of stuff like with like shamans and like how you'll hear about, like, there's like, I don't know, like there's like a rift or something with like people that are practicing shamanism that are like newer. And then some people that are more like that were in the shamanism traditionally already before. Like, is there like a thing against that? Like, is there like some kind of etiquette like that you guys think is important to consider when people are like either claiming stuff or I don't know, or saying stuff? Like, well, what's your guys' take on this? You know, because I'm curious about that.
Yeah. So for me, I as a shaman, I do my best to give reverence and respect to the people who come from traditional, lineaged, and indigenous traditions of shamanism. So my system is classified as neo-shamanism because it is a revivalist or a reconstructionist system. We do not claim any elders. We do not claim any lineage. We are not connected to any sort of indigenous tribe. So those who are part of lineage and indigenous traditions do not like it when these new modern day practitioners, whether they are actual occultists or new agers, calling themselves shamans without giving that respect. So without using the term neo shaman, I'm sure some don't care, but as a whole, they do take it offensively when people are sort of appropriating that term. And they don't do anything shamanic. They don't do any actual shamanic practices. They just say, oh, because I work with energy, I'm a shaman. No, shamans don't just work with energy. There's a whole cosmology and a whole cosmogony that, you know, goes with shamanism that most of these newer practitioners would probably never even have heard of. So they do take offense to it. Unless you give the respect where it's due. And in my case, it would be labeling it neo-shamanism rather than shamanism because there is no lineage that I can hearken back to or there are no elders that I can claim connection with. Not sure how Quinn would see it.
When it comes to like shamanism, I usually always think of the very old school, like animistic, like medicine man, medicine woman, cunning man, cunning woman, type of approach to it. You know what I mean? And of course, your like spirit journeys and you know your shamanic travels and stuff. It's what I practice is it was said. That shamanic magic and the way that it works is it has ties to shamanism because of the certain type of like fasting and seclusion and the trance states and the trance states enabling interactions with the spirit realm and so it has characteristics of shamanism in it for sure. But to me, it's not exactly the same as you'll see with those who come from shamanic traditions that, you know, stretch back generations and they will have like, you know, particular dances and chants that that are incorporated into the rituals for spirit interaction. So even though what I practice has certain qualities that relate to shamanism or that kind of reflect that, those techniques, you know, I don't consider shamanic magic as shamanic, as even though there are some authors that do. So since that's not really my, you know, wheelhouse when it comes to other people talking about it, it's just kind of one of those things I really don't, you know, I don't put any mind to. I don't disagree or agree. You know, I'm not really in the place to say whether someone is, that's what they are, or that's what they're not. You know what I mean?
For sure. Right on. Excellent, brother. Yeah, well said. Yeah, because it's like, I remember even when we were talking last time, Quinn, and you were we were talking about the LBRP, and you were like enunciating, you were like intoning these names, and I was just getting the vibes too. I was like kind of giggling or something, because I was like, oh man, like that's such a shamanic kind of a thing to it, like, you know, where you could kind of feel the energy off of it. It's pretty cool. Like what would you guys think, like do shamans typically, like, if you had to give it like a category, or are they more of like a spiritual model based, or like does that even count, or do they just work with a bunch of different things? Like, what do they mainly consider their workings with, like in terms of like a model or something?
If you're talking between the spirit model and the psychological model, yeah, all shamans are spirit model. I don't know any shaman that would give any real credence to the psychological model, being that shamanism is very ancestral, so there are spirits right there. You have to be in communion with the spirits of nature in order to help with the herbal remedies and concoctions that they come up with for like healing and things like that. You have to know how to get in touch with totem animals, power animals, spirit guides and things like that. So you have to know how to, you know, shamanic journey down to the underworld, in order to do those types of things, to engage with those types of spirits. It's almost a requirement, that you would have to be spirit model, mm-hmm. in order to work pretty much with any classification of shamanism.
Okay. And that sounds cool. Like, and that sounds like obviously like a lot more than like even energy too. So they consider spirits more than energy in a sense, like a little bit more, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't know of any shaman that would not consider spirits to be a reality. Like, they are conscious, intelligent beings. Now, they might not have bodies, you know, they might not, you know, you might not be able to reach out and touch them, you know, but they would not just think that it's just this amalgamation of energy, you know, cute, cuddly energy, you know, open your heart space and all this other stuff. They would look at them as veritable entities existing within their own right. If humans were to die out tomorrow, if there was a nuclear blast and it took us all out, you know, the spirits would still be around.
Nice. Hell yeah. What do you guys think is like a difference with like a spirit, since we're talking about spirit, like spirit and soul, what do you guys think that like a key difference is, like, in regards to that, like maybe from a shamanic perspective or just in general from a cult perspective?
Yeah, that's a cool one. Quinn, do you want to take that one first?
You know, this one's a hard one to really pin down because it's all speculation. But like, for instance, I think our soul is what gives us life, and then our spirit is what animates us. Our spirit has a lot more to do with our personality and particular virtues that are qualities of our personality. So for instance, like the spirit of a cheetah could be seen as being fast. The spirit of a rock could be hard and, you know, rigid. So I think spirit has a lot to do more with an essence, while soul has to do with our actual existence within the matrix. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the part about spirit? I couldn't hear that word that you said. I could spirit with what? I'm sorry. I couldn't hear that part.
Spirit. I think spirit has more to do with our essence, as people. So like our personalities and so forth, and the things that animate us.
Ethics. You said
that has a lot to do with our spirit. So like soul could have to do possibly more with just that aspect of our existence that transcends our human condition. But you know, that's just me contemplating and speculating on it, because it's, you can even see them as the same thing possibly, you know. So I really have no real take on that.
Okay, for sure. Right on. Good stuff, man.
Yeah. So on my side, I do agree that you know, the soul is what gives us life and the spirit is what animates us.
I would say the difference is that humans have souls, right? Humans have that divine spark that comes from God. We are made in the image of God, and that image is the soul, right? Whereas animals don't have a soul. So animals only have a spirit, or other beings, right? Angels, demons, planetary spirits, right? Planetary intelligences, spherical spirit. We don't call them souls. We call them spirits, right? These are intelligent energies. These are animated I don't know any other word other than energies that, you know, we are able to get in contact with, but they do not have that connection back to God in the same way that we do. They are, of course, energeia, like we are. They are, of course, created beings, but we have that direct connection through that spark that was given to us by God, which is the soul, and no other being has that, at least that we're aware of, maybe elsewhere out in the universe somewhere, but as far as we can see and know, no other being has that spark, that divine connection back to God, to be able to not only find our way back to God, but to be able to comprehend and to contemplate, you know, the nature and the will of God and things like that. So yeah, that's how I would answer that.
Nice. Very cool. Very cool. Give me a second, guys. I got to take a bathroom break. So you guys hang tight. I'll see you guys in a second.
Sure, sure. No worries. Quinn, do you got any questions on your side that we can answer?
Piggy Bunny, I don't have many people in here. But Piggy Bunny asked, like, what made you establish a practice? Was it for self-illumination or for practical change in life? So, like, for mysticism or for magic, pretty much?
For me, it started out with, you know, being, you know, because I started when I was 13. So it was the practical stuff, you know, trying to get, you know, the cute cheerleader to, you know, notice me, try to pass my, you know, test, you know, try not to get in trouble with my parents, you know, things like that. You know, a good luck spell here and there. But as I got deeper into the occult, most people tend to fall off and they either drop it completely or whatever. But as I got deeper, I discovered the more spiritual aspects of it, the more spiritual nature, the high theurgic nature to a lot of what occultism has to offer. And I discovered that that's the true purpose of all of the mystical, esoteric, and occult practices. The practical stuff, the mundane stuff, you know, getting a girlfriend or getting a new job, those things are great. But like I keep saying, you're going to die one day, and those things are not going to help you, you know, with eternity, right? As I got deeper into it and more into the esotericness or the esotericism of it all, and understanding what's going on behind the scenes, I fell in love with the spiritual nature of it and the soul elevation of it and the getting back to God of it. And so that's what I started to chase, like literally when I was like 20, you know, so while I was in the middle of college, I was like, this practical stuff is great, but one day I'm not going to be here. And I would like the knowledge that I've gained and the practices that I've done to have done something for me when I'm no longer here. I hope that answers the question. Excellent question.
Yeah. We've talked about this before, how it was very opposite for me. How like we went reverse directions, because when I started getting into occult, it was much more for the mystical side, because I was just very curious about life and the cosmos and God and all in spirits and everything like that. A lot of it had to do with dealing with relatives who were fundamentalist Christian, and me and my cousin often debating, you know, at a very young age, like 11, 10 years old, talking about God and him being like, oh yeah, wow. If you don't follow the word of the Lord, you're going to hell. And then I'd be like, so this little Buddha kid, like this, who lives in the Himalayas, who's never come across Western religion, is going to hell now? Like, and so yeah, it was just very perplexing to me as a child to think that, like, oh yeah, if you don't believe in the Bible, you're going to hell. It's like, dude, there's like, this world is huge. There's so many different religions. So like, what?
It's still perplexing, like, to me.
Yeah, and then so that's what got me into the occult and just like trying to learn more about the mystical side. And then not until you know, a few years ago, a couple years ago, is when I really started getting serious about, okay, how do I apply the things that I've learned through mysticism and metaphysics and all that? How can I apply it to life? Because practical magic, I got to the point where I was like, okay, I want to learn how to read these grimoires. I want to learn how to open a grimoire and not be so confused.
Yeah.
But you know, I want to be able to look at a pentacle or a magic circle, be like, oh, this is what this means right here. Oh, these names are what this is. And I'm at that. I've gotten to that point now, so it makes it actually like viable to practice for the more mundane things. But yeah, it was very much the opposite for me, for where I got into it through mysticism. Then I got to the point of like, all right, how can I apply this to life and actually, you know, tilt the scales in my favor for particular endeavors within life. So yeah, I always thought it was pretty, pretty cool how that the journey is reversed for some people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
It's fascinating. I got one over here from Nan Patty Boys and Doggies. Do you believe animals like pets, cats, etc., are sent as part of our growth or guidance? I do not know. I don't believe that pets are, you know, anything special in the spiritual sense. Not to say that we, you know, we can't, you know, learn from animal spirits and stuff like that. Of course, in shamanism, they are extremely important, the spirits of animals. But the notion that they're sent to us for that specific reason is a bit determinist, and within occultism, determinism is probably not that popular, if it exists at all. I mean, I'm sure it does somewhere, but they're just animals. Now they have spirits, and you can interact with those spirits, but they weren't sent to you, you know, for that purpose, to teach you and to guide you and everything like that. No, I don't. Anyway, I don't know if Quinn has, you know, an alternative feeling, but I don't think that.
That might be a personal thing. You know what I mean? Someone might love their dog or their cat so much that they have some type of connection with them, and they would like to see it as like a spiritual guide. And you know, if that's how they see it, and you know that there's certain that pet helps them through life, then cool. You know, but as in being sent to you to spiritually guide you. It really depends. It's a personal thing. Me personally, I kind of side with y'all on that. You know, but either way, it's not wrong. If that's what you believe in, it's not wrong. You know, if it helps you out and it doesn't hurt anyone, and you know what I mean, then okay, that's cool.
Yeah. I guess this one kind of has like a gray area vibe, I guess, if you will. And then I guess initially I do kind of see it, like if I had to give a concrete answer, like in a sense how Joe was talking, I would lean to what you guys are saying. Like, I don't think so directly. But what I've seen, like say going to the vet, right, for like your annual checkup or for whatever random reason, or just going to like the parks, like dog parks or blah, blah, blah. I noticed that the freaking owners are just like the dogs a lot, like whether they they physically end up looking like them, like whether you have a big burly dude, then you have like a burly looking dog, or like a foo-foo dainty man will have a dainty little doggy or the mannerisms, right? And then like so that's a thing. And then so you can kind of, if you realize that your pet is similar to you, I guess you can learn from them in a sense of I think about like kids, like how your kids are offsprings of you. And then you'll see like their good traits and their bad traits. And then so like with me, I've learned that like I had to learn a lot about like patience, like through my offspring. I saw that like, oh my God, like there's hella times where I need to like rein in my patience and stuff like that. Right. So then I learn about that. And then I have a dog, and like, I don't think he necessarily is here to guide me like that. But what I do see is that like, I have this funny wild side to me that has to do get tamed because I see that from my dog. And then I notice that I'm like, oh wait, I think I have something like that. And then, so it's good to like learn from life like that. So there's stuff you can learn, but, directly, I don't know about like directly guided. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a gray. It's a kind of a gray one, I guess, but,
yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't want people to get it, you know, confused. I'm not saying that you can't learn from your pets and like animal spirits and stuff like that. They are important in shamanism and folk practices and stuff like that. But for something that doesn't have a soul to be sent to you for a reason, I don't know. That's very determinist or very, you know, you're the special one and I'm going to give you this. And I don't know. I have a hard time with that. It's sort of like the whole familiar thing. There's a lot of novice witches who think that their pets are their familiars when familiars are not given to you in that kind of sense. They don't just show up. You have to ask for them. Right. And then when you ask for them, then they are presented to you by another spirit. They don't just randomly show up. You request them from another spirit and the spirit provides you with a familiar. I have a hard time with things like that. So,
yeah, I didn't know that too. What you just explained, like there's like a format, like in regards to that, like there's like, if you want to get into that kind of thing, it's good to know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not you just go to the rescue and because you and Spot have a connection and you do magic, Spot is your familiar. No, I mean, that sounds cute and all that. And it sounds nice. And it's nice to think about when you're laying with your pet or whatever. But that just because it feels good and it's nice doesn't make it real or doesn't make it valid. Right. A familiar is a spirit, not an animal. It is a spirit that is given to you by a higher spirit to assist you in your magical journey. Not the pet who likes to sit, you know, by you when you're, you know, casting a circle. That's cool and all, but doesn't make it your familiar. So
right, totally. Yeah, I definitely see that. Yeah, what do you guys think of, like, if I can ask about coagulation? Is it like it's like a spiritual alchemical thing? Is that a thing that you guys, is that a thing like to you guys?
Oh.
Or what do you guys think about that?
You mean salva et coagula?
I guess it was like, I heard about it. God, what was I reading? Fuck, what book was this? Fuck.
Probably something alchemic.
Yeah, I don't know if it was to do with, like, I forgot if it was one of those, something in regards to Lucifer. It was either that or I forgot where, but it was like, but I guess how they were explaining it, it was just like in terms, I think it was like for your spirit, like, you know, like there's that whole thing of like purifying your spirit or like kind of like merging your spirit, like kind of deifying your spirit. Like, is that regards to that or am I off?
Well, so I don't practice alchemy, but from what I understand, it's like, breaking down or like a dissolving and then coagulating for alchemical components. So that way you can break them down to to their base form, I guess, their base material. And then I wish Alchemic Mason was here. He'd be able to explain because I don't do alchemy. But and then I think you like mix it with other things to make something else. If I recall correctly, Quinn, if you know alchemy, please correct me. But I think that's how it is.
I don't know a crap ton about alchemy, but like if we're talking like spiritual alchemy, so the coagulation happens after, so like when you go through initiation, you're pretty much stripping away certain layers of yourself. So just like in alchemy, when you're making a spagyric or something, or you are like burning it down to ash, and then the ash, it becomes like the essence of it, and then you mix that ash and you mix it with other things like the alcohol, and then it becomes like a tincture and so forth. And so that tincture then has the essence. So in like spiritual alchemy, there's a lot of like, you're going through these grades of initiation or self-initiation, and you're stripping away certain layers, and then you're kind of
reconfiguring yourself after you strip it all away. So that's why, like, when you're going through initiations, you tend to come across a lot of different points in life that are very trying, and a lot of trials and tribulations. And those are to kind of like make you, it's to put you up against problems and make you rethink things through a different lens. And so you're stripping away all of these predetermined expectations of what should happen and how things should be. So, and then you're able to look at things through a different perspective. And then once you have stripped away these expectations and these predeterminations, and then you recoagulate, and then you become something else. So that's a huge thing within initiations and spiritual alchemy. You strip yourself of those things that you once were, and then you rebuild yourself into a new person. That's why there's this whole thing of death and rebirth and love initiation.
Mm. Wow. Very cool. Well said, man. Wow. Good shit. Yeah, because I've heard about that, but I just wasn't sure. I just wasn't sure about the whole thing about that. I guess another thing I wanted to ask about is trying to track back this thing. I was curious about you were talking about this recently, Joe. You had mentioned, I never heard about this, but like I guess like there's like four tenets of witchcraft, and then so one of them is like it's like to know, I guess, and then well, what are the other ones? If you could explain a little bit about that. I thought that was pretty interesting because I hadn't heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a more modern thing. It doesn't exist in traditional witchcraft, at least from what I understand. But yeah, so there are four tenets of modern witchcraft. It's to know, to dare, to will, and to be silent, right? So I brought this up when I was talking about occult conspiracy theories and how they were saying how these celebrities are out doing rituals in public and they're on stage doing rituals and, oh, you know, Astro World was a sacrifice and all this other nonsense. And I was trying to relay that they would be they can't be witches and then break all the rules of witchcraft. Like, that doesn't make any sense. If they're witches, then one of the rules of witchcraft is to be silent. So doing public rituals, that's not being silent. That's actually yelling to the entire world, hey, look at me, do this ritual. So it wouldn't make any sense for these celebs to be on stage doing public rituals at the Super Bowl and at their concerts and all this other stuff that are being live streamed on YouTube and TikTok, or, you know, by, you know, the audience and stuff like that. It would make it not silent. It would make it not private. So they'd be breaking the rules.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, yeah. So it's to know, to will, to dare, and to be silent. But that's like a modern thing. Probably came on the scene around Crowley's time. Being popular. So the late 1800s, early 1900s. Oh, so
interesting. Yeah, because it's like I think you were even saying like I think it was today or it's like it kind of makes sense that if these people were saying some like stuff that was like for real, like that, like that they would get, you know, murdered or X'd out, then like how come like David Icke is still like running around, like when he'll have an assembly, he'll have a whole thing of God knows how many thousands of people in a thing, and then and there's other people like that too. It's like how come they're like running around like that? Like that's like that's something that kind of hit me, and I was like, dude, that one really kind of makes a lot of sense.
I would urge people who are into occult conspiracies to do a comparison. Look at who you think the government has killed or, you know, had a hand in taking out. Look at who they are and look at what they supposedly exposed, right? And then go look at the people who you're accusing of exposing things, and you realize that they're not dead. Look at what they're exposing and compare the two, and then maybe ask yourself why, right? Maybe because one actually has implications and could really damage careers, damage lives, like child nonsense, fraud, money laundering, tax evasion, you know, murder for hire. Those are some real things that people are really out here getting taken out for. Or so-and-so's a witch, so-and-so's in the Illuminati, look at what's being exposed and who's dying, and then look at what's being quote unquote exposed and who's not dying, and compare the two.
It's a trip how the occultic thing gets kind of scapegoated, it's a convenient thing to scapegoat, and then it's like, and then it adds a lot of confusion once you get onto the social platforms, because you'll see so many videos of all this different stuff, and then it's easy to believe, because a lot of the people putting out those things, maybe they'll have so many followers or it'll get so much traction, it could be easy to really start buying into that stuff, and
that's true, man. Mm-hmm. It's insane. I did a 4-hour, as I was telling you guys when we were about to film the podcast earlier today, I did a 4-hour live stream on Wednesday. The only reason I stayed on for 4 hours was because we were talking about occult conspiracy theories, and these people were throwing out the wildest. It was insane what people believe just because it's on YouTube and a celebrity goes like this or a celebrity does this. The accusations that come, it's insane. And so I did a 4-hour stream debunking it all, trying to get people to see logic and reason, which shame on me, because people don't see logic and reason.
It's always the same. It's always the same culprits too. It's always Baal, or it's always Moloch, or it's always Satan and the devil. Yeah. It's always the same. Lucifer is always the same culprit. It's never anything beyond that.
Yeah, Baal. Baal is a super popular.
I doubt any of these people actually look into the actual history of Baal and being a storm god, and Moloch being most likely coming from Melech, meaning king, which had to do with Baal Melech, and all the Satan really just meant adversary, accuser, and it was more just the person, the accuser of those, hey, how much faith do you really have in God? I'm going to prove you wrong and things like that. Wasn't as much of a evil figure as some portray a lot of these, figures of antiquity of in God and the devil and stuff like that. So it's they take a very basic surface level understanding of these deities and so forth, and then they apply it to all these conspiracies.
Yeah.
100%. It's insane.
Yeah, and it takes a while to
Jen is saying that she got into it with a woman about how mudras are not demonic gang signs. Yeah.
Demonic gang signs.
By the blood gang. And I'm sure there are other signs that gangs might use that deal with occultism and stuff like that. It's crazy.
That's funny. Demonic gang signs. That's so good. But when they say, because I've been reading it's right here. This is one, the Book of Abersax. And here they were talking about, Michael Chittatelli. You actually recommended it, Joe. And see, you got the hard. When they talk about signs, because I'm in the early part of this one, when they talk about signs, what does that mean? Is this hand signs or what does that mean? I haven't gotten there yet.
So that one in the Book of Abraxas is a little dubious. I don't know how deep I was. So Michael Chittatelli, he's involved in gang life, and he's in prison right now. He went to prison for it already, and then he got out. And when he wrote the Cross Keys, during the introduction, he claimed that it was all behind him. He gave it all up. But then a couple years ago, him and his uncle were caught, and it was determined that he was the leader of the assassination arm of Los Zetas, I think. One of the Mexican cartels. I think it's Los Zetas.
Yeah, that's a one. That's one. Oh wow.
And so in the book, he has, and I hope I don't get in trouble from, you know, for promoting gang signs, but he has something called the Corn Ashram right here, where he shows the hand sign right here. But this is actually a gang sign. Now, he makes claims that it is supposed to be this one right here, huh? And a bunch of other stuff. But that, but it is actually a gang sign. It's like on the FBI website and everything.
Oh.
So it's a little dubious with that one. Yeah.
Wow.
They adopted a lot of that. Like, so if you look into, like, when it comes to the, like, the whole people's and the folk nation, like, organization, they, a lot of the things, the symbolism they have is kind of occultic to the point that where they will have, like, certain numbers represent things, certain points in the star represent certain things. So it's not a cult, but it's like the whole kind of, they use the same type of, they fashion symbols in the same manner where the when each symbol represents something. So it's not a cult, but they use some of the same techniques to hide a lot of their, a lot of their, like, sayings and, you know, things that they live by and so forth. But yeah, that whole five star nation thing, like that, yeah, that's for sure the gangsters within that area, or within that faction have adopted that. But it is, I don't know what the mudra is supposed to, if that's actual mudra or not.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And sorry to interrupt. So I got about 20 minutes left and then I got a hard stop. So just to let you guys know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I have to, I'm in that same thing, maybe slightly, cause, well, one, my battery, but two, I got to go to, I got to take everyone to lunch over here, but, I'm kind of roughly on the similar thing.
People are waving at me that I, so I got about 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah. Because Quinn, a little bit earlier, you know, we're talking about, like, this scapegoat stuff and, like, how Baal gets popular. You said Moloch and then, like, Lucifer is, it's like a trip because, like, just recently, like, I started, like, reading more about Lucifer and stuff like that. And then I got the rites of Lucifer, which I started. It's, like, super cool. I like it a lot. I have a nice connection with that. And but when I hear about, like, rites, because I've been hearing about this too, like, what does that mean? Like, can you guys explain that to me? Like, what does it mean, like, the rites of something, like R-I-T-E-S?
Yeah, it's just a ritual, ceremonial rites. So, like, a ceremony is pretty much a compilation of multiple rituals. So, like, within a ceremony, you will have certain rites, like the rite of purification and rite of consecration and rite of invocation. So all of these little fragments of a ceremony are rites.
Okay. So hence why it sounds similar in terms of base to ritual. It's like another kind of, like, off that.
Yeah. It's like smaller rituals. And then when you have a whole bunch of these rites together, it becomes a ceremony.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Nice. Yeah, because that's why they have, like, the different masks and the different rites, and then so it's like compiling all of them. Okay. Hell yeah, dude.
Yep.
Good shit. Earlier you said, Joe, you said the Zetas, right? Like the gang, right? And then, like, because I remember I heard of that, right?
I think it's Los Zetas.
I think
it's Los Zetas.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're right, because I remember hearing that. Remember that show Gangland? I don't know if they still have that. Did you guys ever watch that, Gangland?
Yeah.
So I remember that's where I heard it. I'm pretty sure. Like, I didn't see all the episodes of that series, but I saw a good chunk of them, and I remember hearing that word.
Sorry.
Like,
It was the Latin Kings.
Oh, okay.
Justice.gov, it was the Latin Kings.
Okay.
He was the leader of the assassination arm for the Latin Kings.
Okay, cool. Uh-huh. Even the Latin Kings were on that show.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Correct, Quinn, the five-pointed star?
Yeah, because they're part of a Turkish. When you're talking about, like, those Midwest gangs, like, in that area, they have the peoples and then the folk nations. I don't want to go too deep into that. But yeah, I believe the Twelve Nations is five star. I don't know. That's not my wheelhouse. But yeah, there's two different nations to that, and then they have like the 6-point star. Some will have the hexagram, and some will have the 5-point star.
Nice. Yep. So, yeah, like the Latin Kings, that's East Coast, right? That's more like New York, right? I think the Latin Kings.
I'm sure that I don't study gangs or anything like that. I'm sure they've got outfits everywhere. But the one that he did govern was the East Coast. It says that he led the Latin Kings criminal activity in the Eastern region and held the title of Supreme Regional Overseer for the East Coast.
Damn, that's a hell of a title.
Liaison between the East Coast and Chicago.
Oh, so, wow. They're pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah. He supposedly had like mafioso connections as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, his uncle was a member of the Boston Mob. Yep.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, they actually got arrested at the same time. So like they like went after his uncle and him at the exact same day, everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I don't need no gang problems, so we can not talk about that. I don't need any gangs showing up at my doorstep. So.
Yeah, they're the yellow and black, I guess, colors. I remember that. They're the yellow and black.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's just something that I remembered because it was different than on the West Coast. But it's a trip because I remember hearing there's even like in Mexico, like there's a cartel called the Templars or something like that. Like, it's a trip. Like, do these gangs take names from like occultic groups? Is that a trend or something like that?
I mean, so I don't know about names, but I know that they are not all of them. I can't say that, but a lot of them are engaged in occultism, where they venerate Santa Muerte, or they might venerate certain issues that deal with thievery or criminal activity and things like that. There's actually a really good movie that it's on Hulu with Shia LaBeouf, and I forget the name. The Protector or something like that. Where he plays a bodyguard to a cartel sort of a thing. And there's this one scene where they go to war with this other cartel gang guy, and in order to ensure that he gets the win, he goes to a Santa Muerte devotee. I don't know exactly what they practiced, but he went there and he brought a sacrifice, which was a person, and you know, they killed her and they took her blood and they poured it all over, you know, the altar and everything like that, and they did the ritual to like ensure that when he came to the U.S. to kill Shia LaBeouf and all the other people, you know, to take out their side of the gang, that it would be successful. So he bathed in the blood and, you know, had all the symbols written on him and on the ground. And, you know, the witch was saying all the words and all this other stuff. So, I mean, I'm sure it doesn't go exactly like that. Obviously, it's dramatization for, you know, Hollywood. But that's a good depiction of, like, what they do in order to ensure that their criminal activity doesn't get seen by, you know, law enforcement.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were talking about that, and I was watching something on Griselda Blanco, you know, the whole like cocaine yacht lady, and like, when they were going across through there, like when they were doing raids on a lot of those houses, they were finding a lot of like cauldrons that you would see, like all of my own bit, because they'd find cauldrons with like bouquets and like human bones in them and stuff like that. So, of course, the media is like, oh, they're worshiping the devil and stuff. And it's like, no, it actually goes deeper than that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Denise is saying brujeria, shamanismo, curanderismo, etc. Nice.
Yeah, like I remember seeing that on Gangland too, because like they have their patron saints for that, for stealing. And then so they like honor and they worship their saints for that stuff, to kind of for their cartel stuff, you know. Well, I even have a bit of a story that's like, you know, that was like in real life, you know. So like every year, you know, we go at least once, but probably twice a year, we'll drive to Baja, and then we have like a family house that's over there in the kind of by Ensenada, so in the middle of Baja. It's really nice, like literally like right at the beach, pretty much. Like pretty much at the beach. And it's like a gated community type of thing, right? And this and that. And what happened about like last year is that the cartel started having a war with like the security people at that community, at the family home community. And then they killed several of the guards that we had. And and the reason why that place was like a hotspot, because it's right by the water, and like, because it's like a secluded, like a gated kind of a place. Not that many other public people get in there, but it's like a very good spot. Like if you have boats and you're trying to drop off like drugs and this and that, it's like a perfect spot. It's like a perfect gym.
Oh yeah.
Cause it's like we have like our private beach area. So it's kind of like private. So if you can get in there from the water, it's like easy money to dump off all your shit. So that's why they finally figured it out. It's like a newer cartel. I forgot what they call themselves, but they're like the newer generation of the cartels. And they're the ones, because the older cartel, they were cool with them.
That actually might be their name. There is a new cartel called the New Generation Cartel.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, that's them. Yeah. So that, those guys were the ones that got into it with the security people from our little family home gated community. And so this was about a year ago. Dude. Yeah. So they killed some of them. And it's a trip, because when I would be over there chilling by the beach, I would see some people, like, it's almost like they have like young kids, or like not a kid, but like a young teenager. They would have them out there waiting for the shit. So it looks like if a teenager's out there, oh, whatever, right? But they'll have like these young teenagers working for them too. And then one day I see them out there. I'm like, what are they doing out there? But I'm not going to go and walk up to them type of thing. But like one day I was like, why are they hanging out? Signals. Yeah. I'm like, why are they hanging out there? Like, cause I know that those people, you could tell they look like they didn't belong in the gated community where we were at. Like you could just tell that they didn't belong in there type of thing. And I'm like, huh, I wonder what this is about. And later on I heard stories, and thank goodness that we weren't there at the time. And then what they did in the last year ever since is like they buffed up all their security. They got like they enhanced like these their gates and all, like they did everything super up. And then even for a while they had the army over there, like the army was over there for months. And then the army just finally left, because I think it kind of calmed down. But the army was there for a while, where when we went last time we saw them, and then we would give them like food just to kind of like support them. We would like give them like sandwiches and drinks and snacks and stuff like that, just to kind of keep them, to let them know that we support them and that we're thankful for them for watching out, because we know at any time that new generation cartel could probably go over there and start doing what they've done. Because, you know, like the newer people, you know, always have more to prove. Like the younger people have more to prove, in a sense, I guess. They have more of a, like more of a chip on their shoulder. And so that's why more shit can escalate, you know, because they weren't like the older cartel. The older cartel was kind of more like, I don't know, like they had a I guess a type of a trust or a type of a knowing that they had already. But so that was a recent story.
Yeah, man, I'm sorry, but I'm glad you guys weren't around there.
I know.
Caught up in all that.
I know, totally, because our house was, because like you have to get in, you have to, you know, click through the little gate, and then every time you walk by a guard, like, or the guard will ask you, oh, so what are you here for? Like they'll ask you or this and that, or they'll let you in if they recognize your face. And literally from their post to our house is just like, I don't know how many feet, like 100 feet. Like it's not that far. You know what I mean? So we're close to that action. Like in theory, but even though thank goodness we weren't there at the time. But so that shit.
And the movie that I was talking about, if you guys want to check it out, it's called The Tax Collector.
Okay, cool. I haven't heard of it.
Shia LaBeouf. And David Ayer directed it. So if you're a fan of Training Day or End of Watch or even the first Suicide Squad, David Ayer is the same director.
Oh, Suicide Squad. That's cool.
Box office wise, it didn't get good reviews, but it's actually a really good movie.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I never even heard of it. Yeah, got to check that out.
Yeah, the tattoo that Shia LaBeouf had on him, he actually got that actually tattooed on him for the movie.
Wow.
And he actually, in preparation for it, he was hanging out with a particular LA neighborhood called the Harpies, which go back to, I think, like the 50s. He was actually hanging out with them and trying to like kind of get the lingo down and everything for the movie. So, you know, he really tried to do his whole, you know, method acting by actually hanging out with real gangbangers from that movie.
Crazy, man.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. All
right. So we about to call it on this one?
Yeah, I gotta.
Almost wind down time.
Yeah, I gotta go to myself, and it's about lunchtime. So then, it's on me right now, and so yeah, we had an early breakfast, but now lunch is on me. So, on top of that, yeah, but dude, right on, guys. This was very cool shit. Freaking yeah, we gotta keep this up every once in a while. If you guys could
freaking
we can do all this together. That'd be so dope, you know. Freaking really cool stuff. Really cool stuff. Yeah. So it's always
Louis, if you need help downloading this and you know like finding it or whatever. Oh, thank you for the roses. Casual peace and love. Just let me know and I can guide you through it, brother.
Oh hell yeah, dude. Perfect. Thank you, dude. Yeah, it's always good stuff, man. I always learn a lot, and then after I talk to you guys, I always feel like a type of groundedness, you know what I mean? So that's like what you guys kind of bring. But then two, I don't know. I just feel more like, I just feel more expanded. You know what I mean? For lack of better words.
Awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so yeah, cause I'm in here. I'm doing, you know, I'm learning and stuff. So it's really cool to be able to kind of pick your guys' brains and to be around you guys. And then that way, I just feel more in tune with myself and then with, and like with the concept of like magic and stuff like that. So yeah, it's pretty cool. So right on. I'd like to thank you guys for sure for that. Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. Well, all right, guys. All right. Yeah. You guys have a good rest of your day, man. And I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Yeah. Thanks everybody for being here. Appreciate all your time. Thank you for the likes, 7.9K likes. Appreciate that, guys. And like and follow for more. Go ahead and give Quinn from Man and Medim a follow. Give Louis that 11 of the Uncanny Mystic Minds podcast a follow. And that'd be it for me, guys. As always, seek the mysteries. Peace.
Peace, y'all.
Sweet. All right. Well, that was another episode of Uncanny Mystic Minds. We hope you guys enjoyed that, and we'll talk to you guys later.